The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
To Flame On. I'm Brian. I'm here with Oral.
Hi.
And Jared.
Hi.
And we are doing a very, very quick, very, very brief microsode all about the wide world of Mad Max. We are all now, we've all seen Fury Road. Mm-hmm. Now we said Thunderdome. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've seen in the past Road Warrior and Beyond Thunderdome. Mm-hmm. I think I saw the original Mad Max. But it's been a while, admittedly. Yeah. Yeah. But this is basically an entire episode just about Fury Road. If you want to see the movie, but you don't want spoilers, obviously, you know, come back when you've seen it.
Pause this.
Yeah, pause this. Keep it paused for the hours and hours that it will take to go to the theater and see this.
It's only 2 hours long. It's not that bad.
No, I meant just the whole time, you know, from like you leave the house, you got to get tickets, you got to buy popcorn, you got to do the thing. Anyway.
Okay.
But, be that as it may, there's not a lot you really can spoil about this movie, because the thing about Mad Max is they're all very individual sort of tales of a certain world, the world being the world after the world. Basically, we've had oil shortages, possibly some kind of nuclear apocalypse.
Post-apocalyptic society.
Very, very common in a lot of fiction. Not just these days, but the last, you know, 100 years probably or so, or a little less. Basically, since we realized we could actually have a post-apocalyptic world. But what sets this series apart is the sheer joy in the world that they're in, even though it's bleak. Obviously, it's post-apocalyptic. Gas in water and anything you need to survive is at a premium.
Guzzling,
yes. I love that. But the joy comes from the love of, I think, the automobile and the crazy, insane, everyday items that can suddenly become weapons, and things that become weaponized, and the sheer joy of filmmaking, at least in certain of the movies, including Fury Road, where the chase becomes a huge, huge part of the plot, almost eclipsing whatever plot's there.
Well, what's great about Mad Max is that there's this great sense of community with whatever sort of tribe you ascribe yourself to. And really, it boils everyone down to their most basic elements, where we are tool makers as a species, and our primary function is to locate water. And what was that one line that Immortan Joe talked about? Don't become addicted to water.
Oh, like, okay. So let's talk about Immortan Joe, because he's an interesting character. In every of these movies, there's been these warlords, sometimes nameless, but a lot of times they'll have, like, what was, do you guys remember Tina Turner's?
She was Auntie Entity.
Yes. Auntie Entity.
And in Road Warrior, it was Lord Humongous.
Lord Humongous. Yeah. So in that same vein.
And then the first one was Toe Cutter.
Oh, yep. I'm so glad you guys remember this. Immortan Joe is this warlord who maintains this thing called the Citadel. And the Citadel is this, like, a butte, I guess, technically. Geographically, it's one of those large thing, rock formations that just jut out of the desert.
Yeah.
And he has managed to sort of build upon an existing, well, and I'm delving into some of the backstory that you get actually from a comic book that they released from Vertigo. But I think it's Vertigo. Yep, Vertigo. But basically, it's a paradise. It's an oasis of sorts. But it's an oasis really for Immortan Joe, because he has imprisoned women who he wants to get, you know, the purest, most pristine conditions for, so that they will produce a viable male heir. He is at this point in the movie pretty much towards the end of his life, and he is being sustained with technology such that they have. And he has offspring that help him run things, but one is a hulking brute that seems a little slow. The other one is a sort of deformed, I don't know what condition he has, but sort of a midget, but can't move much. And
we don't want to use those terms.
Well, yeah, I don't know what the actual technical term for the condition
is.
He's
a deformed human being.
There we go. And but he's the brains and seems to sort of run things, you know.
It's a lot like Master Blaster and Kang.
Who
and
runs by the town?
No. Master Blaster.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I was mixing in my Ninja Turtles with Fury Road, Mad Max. So,
but and same then, principle, though.
Same principle. So the idea here, though, is that Immortan Joe wants this offspring, and so he has these wives, and he's impregnating them, and then they're just not. It's not working out because the world is pretty much fucked. Well, into this whole scene, you have Mad Max. Mad, in case you didn't know, because his family very viciously was taken from him through this world events, and he has this sense of profound loss, but yet he knows he needs to survive. So Mad Max, he's not like, you know, evil or crazy. He's just a little haunted, to say the least. And in this movie, I think, did a good job of depicting that hauntedness. Mm-hmm. Tom Hardy, amazing choice for Mad
so
Max.
So dreamy.
He really is a nice
even in
man.
Like the irradiated sands of wherever we are. So dreamy.
Yeah. I mean, Mel Gibson, of course, was Mad Max for the previous movies, and let's face
and
it,
he did go mad.
He went a little crazy, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I think everybody realized he couldn't. I mean, not just for the fact he's also older now. But they interviewed George Miller, who actually is the same director from all the previous movies. Some people were like, "Oh, it's a Mad Max reboot. I don't want to see that." It's like, no. This is George Miller. This is the guy who did the other ones, and he really wanted to make this movie 15 years ago mm-hmm. is when they started production on this, and various world events intervened. Studios were kind of fickle about supporting the effort. But it is the biggest budget Mad Max film, and it definitely shows in the execution. But you got Mad Max, who's taken captive by the people of Immortan Joe's Citadel. You've got the wives, who we find out about pretty much as things start to unfurl. And there's another character, of course, and pretty much the other major character, Furiosa.
Yes.
Imperator
Furiosa.
Which is a title of some regard, I guess. Furiosa is played by Charlize Theron, looking very, I would say,
Pep
butch.
Pep Boys Butch.
Yeah. Yeah, Pep Boys Butch with the grease on her forehead, sort of war paint looking. So she is a driver / kind of mini warlord, let's say. I don't even know what the
a lieutenant
are. A lieutenant,
sorts,
yeah. So she has the trust of Immortan Joe to command some of his rigs, and so one of the things this little citadel needs is gasoline or whatever, and so they have to send these trucks off to trade, and there's
trade,
actually
it's
Gastown,
and it's the Bullet Farm,
yeah.
So Gastown is the refinery that provides the gasoline, and then Bullet Town is ostensibly like the they make bullets, they reclaim
ammunition silo, yeah.
Exactly. So this is sort of the network that it pre-exists, this world, and Max ends up being I guess there is one more major character, the War Boys, yes. Which at first glance are these creepy, weird looking albino kids. That I guess some people find attractive.
They were very handsome.
Yeah, no, they're all very shirtless,
especially Nux.
Nux.
Yeah, Nux is the main war boy who you get to sort of live sort of vicariously through. And really, I will put a shout out here. A friend of ours, I don't know if you guys know him, Nick Nicholas. If you ever hang around the Bear Den or some of the places around here, if you see a guy who looks like a war boy, that's Nick. Okay. He could easily cosplay. With just a few, I'll show you a picture.
Please do.
Yeah, you'd like him. But he, Nux is an interesting character because he has basically a very odd arc. It's kind of a redemption arc. I mean, I guess it really is a redemption arc, but he starts out as just another one of the war boys who's very excited about going out on the road warrior
it
quest.
It is a lovely day.
Oh my God. We'll get to that. So, but his condition right now, I guess because water is so scarce, because you get injured, because it's just, people are in a messed up state. they need blood transfusions. And Max, as it turns out, is the universal donor, which makes him very convenient and handy to keep around. So, in fact, he then becomes the blood bag for Nux. And Nux is so determined to go out on this this road warrior sort of mission that we'll get to. He takes Max with him as a blood bag, like you do, and keeps him hooked up to him and the whole nine. And, of course, this is the thing where it's a little ridiculous. They mount Max as the blood bag on the front of Nux's car, as like a the woman at the front of the ship, the masthead, I guess. Like, odd choice, because you're like, maybe you want to keep him a little closer to you. Maybe you want to protect him in some way. But it's like that prisoner thing, right?
If I may intervene.
Please.
I think we should kind of stray away from just giving like a play-by-play of like what happened in the movie and sort of just talk about the higher concepts.
That's fine. But okay. I want to lay the foundation, because some people may not even ever care to see this film. Okay. So I want to set the stage.
Those people are stupid.
Well, and we'll get to that. But I want to set the stage. So one more thing and then we will. But so Furiosa, the reason that everybody's gone on this big mission is determined, as a good heroine should be, to save the day, and specifically to save the wives. Mm-hmm. And so even though it turns out after a routine, it looks like they're just going to drive off to get their gas, actually she has taken a little convoy, mm-hmm. and she has secreted away the wives. And so the big plot of the movie, after you have all this setup, is Joe wants his wives back. And hijinks unfold, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the stage. Now, what makes a movie like this and all the Mad Max movies fun and interesting? Well, A, there's nothing else like it. I really would defy. I mean, there's movies with a post-apocalyptic world. There's movies that have car chases. But there's no movies that take the car chases to that next level of hyper-violent, hyper-over-the-top.
It's a level of frenzy.
Yeah, and manic, like the directorial style, which I don't remember the previous movies well enough. Mm-hmm. Did they have that same kind of hyper-kinetic directorial? Because I could see it maybe evolving eventually.
In Road Warrior, there were scenes like that.
Because, yeah, Thunderdome, from what I remember, it was a lot of hanging around in wherever Thunderdome was. What's the place called? Battletown or whatever?
Bartertown.
Bartertown, thank you.
That was below.
You know, the Tina Turner's wandering around singing and stuff. But Fury Road definitely gets back to that Road Warrior mentality. So they're driving. They're chasing the giant armada of vehicles led by Immortal Joe, and then with Nux in there. They're chasing after Furiosa. And they have, let's go through the crazy things on these cars. We got, like, the typical, like, you know, spikes on wheels and...
Well, there was one particular tribe that actually had nothing but spikes on them, but they weren't a part of Immortan Joe's, alliance.
They were just, like, a rogue tribe of road warriors. And then there's also the bike... mountain people.
Yeah, the mountain
people. But in Immortan Joe's, the war boys, they're driving, but they're also running all around on the rigs. You know, they're servicing the vehicles as they need to, which is kind of an interesting thing that you would try to fix your vehicle while you're driving.
I mean, it makes sense to me, like, in this world where everything's falling apart, they kept pushing it in the movie that we're stripped down to our basic instinct, which is survival.
Right.
And the only way you can survive is if you know how to do everything. Like,
you're relying on your community to keep you afloat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite, which is sort of weird, and I don't know cars well enough to really speak to this. But
no.
Yeah, I know. Listen, we can't all rebuild our transmissions ourselves.
I didn't rebuild my transmission. I paid a cute man to do it for me.
At least he was cute. The breathing or the spitting gasoline into the intake, I guess that's a thing. Like, is that like kind of like nitrous that gives you a little boost to?
I don't know.
Really, that's what you took away from that random scene? We're just like, I wonder if this is feasible or not. Like,
well, I feel like I've seen it in other movies, and so I was like, is this really like a little thing where you give the engine a little extra?
We don't know. We'll just admit that. I don't know. Maybe somebody who's listening to this might be able to chime in and say, hey, this is actually scientifically possible.
Please, let's
it's not just the magic of the movies.
You wonder if Mythbusters has already done that. That would be fascinating. They need to do. Mythbusters
submit
needs
it to
Mythbusters. I will. They need to do.
Submit a Mad Max only.
Oh, my God. That'd be amazing. Okay. So, spikes, poles. This is the thing that killed me. So, if you're a fan of, like, real effects in movies, not CG.
Practical effects.
Thank you. It was a better term. this movie is all about that. They mm-hmm. filmed this whole fucking thing out in the deserts of Australia. George is also Australian. And the previous movies were far thicker with that Australian accent. This one had a mix of accents, but... and then they actually had like these Cirque du Soleil like people on poles.
I would say it's like a more like a metronome.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. But the people up on them, they're doing
weighted by engine blocks.
Weighted by engine blocks. And that to me was the height of ridiculousness and in a pleasant way. Like it's so over the top that you're laughing at the largesse or the just, you know. Right. But, you know, hey, for a means of attacks, if you're mm-hmm. trying to drive alongside another vehicle and attack them, mm-hmm. well, that's one way to do it. Yeah. Now, another scene, and I kind of wish they did more with this. This is probably one of the things I would criticize. But again, it's a CG thing. The storm that they drive mm-hmm. into, mm-hmm. it seemed very like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing to see the storm. And they're going to go through this crazy radioactive tornadoes and whatever, and really it was a quick scene mm-hmm. and then by the end they just have to dig each other out or whatever. But I mean, like, I almost kind of wanted to see like shit flying around.
Well, shit did fly
it
around.
it kept it a little more, and not pun intended, grounded. Like that they didn't have more. No, I really didn't.
Your issues with this movie are so trite and bizarre.
I liked it. I loved the movie.
Just, you know what I didn't like? You know what I thought was weird? This small little, like, how did he create a vault to keep them in? Like, where did he get that vault door? Like, nobody's asking this question.
Sometimes, and that usually annoys me when people think about that stuff. I did suspend my disbelief for most of the thing. I loved it. I really did. The soundtrack. Junkie XL, who I've seen in other things on the soundtrack stuff, but I don't know who. Awesome, great soundtrack, very drum heavy, and there's a very good reason for that.
Oh yes, there was that one vehicle which I would hope you would touch on, where it's the war drums and the guitar player. Yeah.
So this is something I saw some people were like thinking was just ridiculous, and in fact, when tribes or battle or armies would go to war prior to the last maybe 150, 200 years, they would absolutely have musicians. I mean, think for just stupid, if you're, you know, you're American, the Revolutionary War, you had the drum and fife corps. Okay. Mm-hmm. That wasn't just symbolic. That was part of your army. Mm-hmm. So go back even further and you had people beating on shit. And it's a smack talk. I am beating my chest. I am announcing our presence.
I've got psychology. Bugle Boy of Company B stuck in my head.
Oh, well, go figure. We were talking about the Andrews sisters earlier.
Yes.
But the guitar player, this also blew my mind because the guy is playing this ridiculous guitar, okay? Mm-hmm. And he is up behind a bunch of giant speakers on the truck. I think it was the same truck that had the guys beating the drums on the back, like the Taiko drums. Yeah. The freaking guitar is spouting flames while he's playing his heavy metal riffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, the most, like, complete statement of male testosterone in that area, that world.
I could sum up this whole, you know, Immortan Joe world where it's hyper-masculinity. It's this energetic death cult.
Which, left unchecked, just runs rampant.
Yeah.
And it's effective. But that's what warlords are effective soldiers who made a bid for power and kept it.
Right.
And it's funny to see, we know that this world exists in a bigger capacity and these aren't the only survivors. Like there are different tribes around, but when you set up a sort of triumvirate of a power where, you know, like, I need you to do this, and you do this for me. It's kind of like when you look at Pokemon, you know, like water beats fire beats grass, but grass beats water.
Yes.
And so, like, you have this sort of, like, power dynamic. And in this, like, this section of this world that we see, which is ostensibly dead, that abuses still run amok. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what I really found... like, to be the most interesting is just, like, yes, the world has ended, but it's not the end of the story, and there will always be survivors, if we're lucky enough. But even then, like, there's no room for compassion. There's no sense of, of kindness, because kindness gets you killed.
Right.
You know, you can sit on your laurels and say, like, I don't want to fight anymore, no. But what happened to that person?
They die. Conscientious objector is not something you can be in this
it's about survival world. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Now, I love that you mentioned the male element, because certainly what is lovely about this film, and I think for many people surprising, given what they know of the movies, the strong female presence, not just in Furiosa, who obviously is basically the hero of the movie. I mean, in many ways, it is not Max's story. Yeah. It's her story.
Yeah.
And actually, kind of, she goes through sort of a hero's journey, almost more than Max, slightly. But then they have the wives, and the wives, you think, well, they're the damsels in distress. Well, actually, they may be in distress, they may be damsels, but
they're not helpless.
Into their own. They certainly are not helpless. Mm-hmm. By the end of the movie, several of them have either sacrificed themselves or played pivotal roles.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the tribe...
the Vuvalani, or Vuvalani, or whatever.
Vuvalani, which...
That's, yeah, it sounds like Volvo.
I mean, you know, that's what it is. And this is the tribe
that... Silent Mobius.
Yes.
Labia.
Oh, God. So this is the tribe that Furiosa came from, and actually...
To the green place.
The green place, yeah. The mythical place they need to get to, and what would that be? That would be the MacGuffin, really, almost, you know.
Yeah.
The thing that drives them along, and, you know. But no, they then play a huge role in the way the movie climaxes and ends in reestablishing society. I mean, basically, again, we're spoiling this movie. You know, Furiosa and the Vuvalani, they, along with the wives, really end up taking over the Citadel.
Well, you kind of need to dial it back where they go to the green place.
Well, right.
The green place isn't there anymore.
No.
It's run foul.
So,
and that was probably the coolest shot in the entire movie,
uh-huh.
where they go to the green place where it was, and uh-huh. it's all the creepy stilt walkers walking around.
Yes,
oh, yeah, and the marsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nightmare fuel. But no, the movie has been, many people online have been saying it's a great female empowerment movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I totally understand why there's that perspective. Now, you know, I just look at it as a great film, and yeah, women have a strong role to play, and they should. But I guess to me, it doesn't stand out as much. I guess in the Mad Max world, certainly this is the movie, other than maybe Thunderdome, where there's like a strong female character.
It's a contrast of how women are treated in Immortan Joe's world, where they're treated as livestock, and then when you go outside of the Citadel world, these are women who've survived on their own without the reliance on men.
Right. I guess in that way, it is very much holding up sort of the typical male whatever on its pet, you know, lampooning it.
Well, I think we as gay men, oh God, I'm going to take it to like a really nerdy.
It's okay. It's
thing.
Okay.
Okay, so,
this is a safe place.
So I think we as gay men have a very different perspective. And you know, taking aside, you know, are gay men, you know, some of the most chauvinistic people? I'm like, well, we're men. Like, sometimes it happens. But I think we know what it's like to look at masculinity and see not necessarily something embracing and empowering as something warped and twisted. And so you have this, like, hyper sense of if you aren't, you know, driving a fast car or, you know, raping women or, you know, striking down the masses, you're nothing. You're weak. You're trash. And so, like, if you look at all of the men in the Citadel, you know, for the most part, even though some of them are mutants and they're dying and they're corrupted, like we all are, like the people down in the wastelands are just emaciated and they're weak and the weak never survive. When you look at the people, the other sort of like tribes from the Bullet Farm and all that sort of stuff, like even though they're all connected, even the people in the valley, in the canyons, like they're hyper masculine men. They're riding motorcycles. And you see this kind of like, you see this dynamic of what it's like not to be that and how devalued you are, because the only reason why the wives have value is that they can possibly give like healthy sons. Other than that, he really doesn't care.
Yeah, because Joe didn't want his wives back. He wanted his child back.
Yeah. Well, once he realized that. Yeah. Did he know she was pregnant before they left?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't remember how that worked out, but no, I do understand that it is very empowering, and that the women in this movie certainly are portrayed in a way that I think is it's the way it should be in any movie. Mm-hmm. But what I kind of torn about is the women are portrayed very masculinely. They're portrayed like really strong male. And in this world, it makes sense because it's that, it's like you said, survive or perish.
Well, let's take off the wrapper of gender norms and just kind of talk about their traits.
Okay.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say that I see them as masculine. I see them as fully formed people.
Self-reliant.
Yeah.
Well, self-reliance, fine. What I'm talking about is, and specifically the Vuvuzela, the vulva people. Like they,
the vulva people.
The Valkyries. They really... they really are very violent and very, like you said, they'll do what they need to do to survive.
They're not violent. They will do what they need to do, but they're not going to take pleasure from doing it.
I totally agree with you there. Yeah. So then what I think of then as just violence is not for the sake of itself, mm-hmm. which would be more of a male thing.
Mm-hmm.
For the female, you know, in this particular case, it's to survive.
Yeah.
Okay. So when threatened, they will be vicious, mm-hmm. but otherwise, like you said, they're more nurturing, and that is borne out with the woman who's got the seeds.
Yes.
And that was really cool because I love that her whole point. You know, this is like she's mm-hmm. probably in her, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s. She's been around long enough to see the whole world from like civilization to now,
and she's a badass sniper too.
She's a badass sniper, and she's got a thing of little seeds that she's ready to replant. Yes. And wants any chance she can. She is like Johnny Appleseed. She's out there planting seeds, which is awesome. I guess I just felt like the violence angle was what I took away as masculine. But I like what your point is. For the sake of it, you know, it's not for the sake of itself. It's.
I think that you may be confusing masculinity for power, and that's what a lot of these women represent. Like they're just powerful women, and then mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, like for example, look at Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is a powerful woman, but her detractors and even like her supporters would consider her somewhat masculine, not because, you know, she's out there chopping wood. Is that power has always been categorized as something like masculine, something male. And like even like when women do have a sense of power, you call them feminine wiles, which is just like sort of like the art of seduction and, you know, using these like secondary traits to get what you want. And
people see that as a negative sometimes.
Yeah, but I don't see them as masculine. Well, I just see them as powerful.
I guess what I think of it is, okay, and this may be ridiculous, I don't know. Okay, I believe if a woman is a strong leader, mm-hmm. like Hillary Clinton, let's say, mm-hmm. I believe a woman will be slower to use force and more wise in a sense that she wants to keep all parties in balance. Yes. And I see the Mad Max world putting that completely in its own mm-hmm. thing where mm-hmm. the female tribe, like, they have to be brutal in that world, but otherwise they will be more nurturing. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was just the viciousness that I perceived when mm-hmm. they attacked the people who were attacking them. I mean, they weren't going out to try to kill these people. Yeah. They were trying to just make it back to the Citadel.
Yeah.
That's where I took that sort of like, oh, they were very masculine. But I totally understand in the world that they're in, they have mm-hmm. to.
Well, I think like a higher level for this discussion is that I think as gay men, we don't see gender norms as a very solidified thing. So like, because we see a lot of masculine and feminine qualities in ourselves.
Right.
And so it's more difficult for us to kind of embrace these two very polarizing elements.
Yeah, sure. And in some ways it also gives us, I hope it gives us a little more insight into that. But mm-hmm. but you're right, it's hard to reconcile the two, you know. Mm-hmm. But I will say overall as a movie, like if you just want a fun action film, this movie does that.
Yeah.
It really does.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Which is why, you know, I actually surprised some people who I thought kind of enjoyed action films didn't like it as much. Mm-hmm. And then there are other people like, well, Pat is one, certainly, who I didn't really tell him much about the movie. He saw the trailers, and so I think he knew a little bit going in. But, like, leaving the movie, he was like, what the hell was that? Because it felt very much like, and it was, you're dropped in the middle, and then you leave before the ending, which, according to some writers, is exactly the right way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, get in late and leave early, you know, it's Bendis's thing or whatever. But, like, that is the world of this movie, and I think if you have seen the other films, it just, they complement each other in sort of filling in these tales from the wasteland.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way I see it, and one of the reasons why I like Mad Max so much is that it's not important how it happened. It's important that it's happened, and this is how you survive.
Yeah.
And you don't always need, like, a sweet little ending at the end of it, because it's, that doesn't exist in this world. And I love that, you know, we are left to fill in the gaps. Like, you know, it's funny, the way they introduced the film, giving you, like, the kind of, like, the TV and radio broadcast, and then, like, juxtaposing that with Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim did the same thing.
Yeah.
Pacific Rim explained a lot. But, you know, it didn't, like, Mad Max doesn't have to.
Yeah. Right.
Just know that, you know, we fucked up.
World's fucked up. Now, speaking of the gaps, so one of the things we alluded to and mentioned is they actually are doing these comics from Vertigo, and it's written by George Miller. Like, he had so much time on this project to kind of develop and develop and develop and not shoot until fairly recently that he actually wrote a whole thing that was supposed to be made into an anime. So he has a whole script about, I don't know if it's about Immortan Joe or if it's about, it's related to the Fury Road movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just another tale, but it, so some of the things that that's come out of that material are these comics. Mm-hmm. I'm holding in my hand here. And the only thing I will say, I mean, the art's great. It's got two tales. This first, there's four coming out, and there's two stories in this first issue. One is about the character Nux and his family.
Who's Beast from X-Men First Class.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can see it in his face.
Yeah, now that you mention that, that's just, without the hair. But the second story is about Immortan Joe, and I will say, of the two, that was, to me, the weaker one, because it really does explain too much.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see exactly who Immortan Joe is, his rise from the military, sort of actually before the apocalypse and into the apocalypse as a proto-warlord, and some of his very, you know, at first for survival purposes, he did terrible things. But I think, Jared, you put it best before we were recording, kind of like a Colonel Kurtz, who started to believe his own legend more than really anyone should. And then that's what led to his thing.
That was something I also kind of enjoyed about the film, is like this whole like Viking theology going on.
Oh,
you know.
Gosh. Yeah, so basically, you know, he is a warlord. He leads by his strength, but he also leads by this kind of quasi-religious, you know, my war boys, you will be with me in Valhalla.
Yeah, they're child soldiers.
Right.
He's a priest king.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So he you know, uses that to incentivize them, and that's part of Nux's journey, is realizing this guy is not what I thought he was, you know.
Ride into Valhalla all shiny and chrome.
Yeah, that chrome thing, I didn't get it first. So when the character's either about to go off and do something crazy.
The war boys,
yeah. You're right. And I thought at first like this was like a stimulant or something, but basically they take chrome spray paint and they spray their mouths so they're all shiny.
Witness.
Like, I was like, wait, is that something like, is it like, are you giving like amping them up? Is it like methamphetamines? Like, what is this? And, you know, it's basically just chrome paint. That's a good point. So, yeah, that was kind of a nice, like, odd, crazy thing.
Well,
what other things did you guys really like about the film?
Well, I thought it was gorgeous.
Yes.
I really liked the pacing. I was never bored.
Nope.
As for, you know, extended universe stuff, that's what comics is for.
Right.
Like, anybody who complains, not saying that you were complaining, but
no,
like...
No, I'm telling people more as a cautionary thing. If you like the level of lack, like, if you like just being dropped in, you don't, you know, you like the mystery, I would not recommend at least this issue.
Yeah.
Because it just gives away more than maybe you should.
I think it took all the elements that we've always loved from the Mad Max films, like the chase scenes, and, you know, they gave you kind of like a Thunderdome-esque, like, grounded place. Like, Bartertown is the Citadel, and, like, you're moving in and out and seeing, like, how other people fare in this world where there's almost nothing left. I will say this. If you haven't watched the trailer for the PS4 game that's coming, Mad Max looks fucking amazing.
I think I had seen that online. What is it like? What kind of game is it though?
It's an open world, like, really? Sandbox. No pun intended.
Oh, good.
Where?
Yeah, I like open world games.
Yeah, where you, like, you know, everything's been taken from you. They take your car, and so you have to rebuild a new car.
Oh, wow.
You're searching for scrap. You're helping other, like, conclaves of people to try to, like, better their lives, but ultimately help you get back what you want.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine about there was an MMO that was released maybe like 4 or 5 years ago called Fallen Earth.
Uh-huh.
And same post-apocalyptic world premise, and the execution was just not very satisfactory. So I'm hoping that this is a good supplement.
Take a look at it, because it looks really good.
Do you know what studio it was?
I do not remember off the top of my head. Okay. But it's also totally told me that I'm okay in buying a PS4, because I'm not just buying it from
Microsoft. I know, I was about to say, this might be the reason to... Now, what would be amazing if Bethesda were to get some license that they did Fallout?
Mm.
Fallout is Mad Max.
Well, I know. No, but think about the most amazing, like, Fallout but Mad Max version. And then an MMO, too. Mm-hmm. Like, that could be ridiculous. There's also, if you were really into, like, cinematography and color and all that, there is a black and white version of this movie. And they have released a trailer of it. And it's because the movie was very color processed, lots of color
that
corrections.
Would look amazing.
Well, and that's what it really. And so I don't remember if the Blu-ray is they're planning to have a black and white version on there as well. But it was just stunning to see the photography in some of the scenes, especially with the black and white.
Yeah, as you're looking at the color palette throughout the entire movie, you see. Like, just earth tones are bombarded on you, and very rarely will you see anything like a cool color, like maybe green or blue, which you only see in either the Citadel or even inside of Immortan Joe's eyes.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. So we liked Charlize, of course, was amazing.
Yes. Yeah, she was fantastic.
Hardy, amazing looking. Really doesn't say a lot in the movie, which is kind of cool too. Again, it's Miller has said this is like his westerns. Like he very much sees Mad Max as a cowboy, an itinerant sort of cowboy. You know, comes in and out and does what he needs to do, and all that.
He's the wanderer,
the wanderer. Yeah, I mean, it could be like a samurai or whatever too. Yeah. You know, but he does have a pretty big role in the movie to help the other characters, but he's not doing it as at first he's not altruistic about it. In fact, it was pretty brutal, the first scene where he interacts with the wives and Furiosa, and it took a good like 10-15 minutes of the movie to unroll before you really think, hey, they actually trust each other to a working relationship.
Yeah.
You know, when basically he goes up, I think, to fix the engine or to do whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the moment when you realize they're putting trust in each other. They're not going to screw each other.
Well, there's something else, too. Like, let's talk about Nux. Because you see him as this, you know, impressionable young man who is... he's got stars in his eyes, and he really wants to go out and prove himself to his idol, his god. And when he fails, not once, not twice, but three times, and he kind of reverts into this sort of vulnerable state where he feels like he's not worthy, but through the wives and through Furiosa, he finds another means of being able to prove himself.
What did she call it? There's a term. Oh, wow. The English major mind in me is... just falling apart. It's not predetermination. It's she's like, this seems like something manifest.
Yeah, manifest destiny.
Thank you. Manifest destiny. Okay. It's like, you know, you need to go out and take care of yourself.
Right.
Like, you know, figure out what you want to live for. And I think that's ultimately why other people in Mad Max will always have a better ending than Max himself, because when he has nothing left to live for, all he wants to do is survive, but surviving isn't living. You know, like, at the end of the movie, when they've completely changed the status quo, and, you know, he could pretty much essentially live there the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And be fine.
Right.
And to have like some sort of a taste of what he used to have. Not that he's in love with Furiosa, which I'm really glad.
Yeah, I was worried like, they were going to do that too.
They didn't do. But like, he leaves because it's like, it's not there. Like, he doesn't have that driving force, but survival.
Right.
Yeah, it was nice to have, when you guys mentioned that specific element where that didn't happen, but there were hints of it between Nux and the red-haired bride. I forget what her name was.
Oh, yeah.
So that was satisfied.
That's
that.
True. Mm. I mean, hints of it, yeah. So, I think that we've covered pretty much everything. There's a lot. Lots again. I actually want to see it again. Mm-hmm. My brother Jeff, of course, who would have been here except
drunk
for,
bitch.
Yeah, a little too much drink. He seen it now twice. Mm-hmm. Right. We both have bought the soundtrack, and my favorite track, if you do get the soundtrack, is Brother in Arms. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of the drums in it, but it also has a good like violin sort of. Ostinato thing going. Okay. That's
if
really
you want
cool.
to burn me a CD, that'd be appreciated. You know,
that was something else I liked about the film is that they would kind of weave like car noises into non-car things.
Yeah. There's some synthetic work in there too, which is it's not obnoxious. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the last film, God. The Thunderdome was back in, what, the late 80s? Yeah. Mid to late 80s?
Mid-80s.
Like, certainly, things have come a long way mm-hmm. in many parts of technology. But music specifically, this is certainly a more modern soundtrack. But it does have some synthetic elements. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. There's some car and mechanical noises in there. It's a good film to see over and over. And just you'll pick up new detail that you missed.
There's so much more depth to an action movie.
I know. Well, that's that. See, this is what I think the Japanese have done very well, and certain directors, they know how to really elevate an action film. John Woo, let's say, from back in the day. Like, they make art out of action. And I think that's why a lot of people really liked this movie. Some people actually said they liked it more than Avengers, and in a certain way, I totally understand that.
I am that person. And, you know, I love Avengers.
Yeah, no, and I do too, but
Scarlet Witch was fantastic.
I would watch this movie, Fury Road, over and over again in the background or actively more than I haven't watched the first Avengers since the theater. Like I know the story. I'm fine with it as an experience. I just don't need it very often, but something like Mad Max Fury Road, I just feel like would be God, you know, I really want to watch that movie again just to relive that experience. You know,
I sat there blown away because, you know, I went in thinking I'm going to see Mad Max. Of course I'm going to see Mad Max, but I had no expectation whatsoever. And at the end of it, like, my friend looked over to me, he's like, did you like it? I'm just like, I thought that was the best movie of the year. Like, action wise, tight storytelling wise, I found that to be my favorite movie of the year. So hearken that to when we do the list of things that we liked in 2015.
For top 10.
We'll have to remember that. If you want to go back and see what we did in the previous years, you know, all of our stuff is now on Stitcher. Do you guys use Stitcher at all?
What?
I know.
For the phone?
Other legitimate podcasts.
A podcast app. Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yay, we're legitimized now.
And we're, of course, on SoundCloud, which I still think is actually a lot more of a fun platform for anything audio, not just podcasts. So we're on SoundCloud, Stitcher. If you just look for Flame On, you'll find us. Of course, we're on iTunes. I want to put a challenge out there. We need people to write reviews. I love hearing people that like our show, and we definitely know because The Nerdy Show has said we've been actually doing really well in terms of our listenership. But I want to hear from people who go, yeah, I like your show, and here's why. Or, alternatively, you're so wrong about such and such. How could you say that, you idiot? I'm fine with that, too.
Speak for yourself.
Because
I will cuss you out.
Either way, I know you're listening, and I like hearing that. Now
we like constructive criticism too.
Oh, constructive, of course. But you know, if we're wrong about something, if I'm a big idiot, which a lot of times I feel like sometimes I am, you know, it happens.
We're human.
That I get across this little table sometimes make me think that that is the case. But
that was just directed at me, folks. Just so you know,
pretty much. But Pat gives it to me too sometimes. But please let us know. Flame On Show is our website. We're on Facebook, Flame On. I think Flame On Show. And Twitter, Flame On Podcast. And we actually have had some great activity recently. We've had Our Dragons and Spandex episodes, our interviews with Ginger Minj. Yay. We're very proud of being in the top three, which I'm glad you've seen it now, I guess. Yeah. You know. And, of course, Trixie Mattel, who is still one of our favorites of all time. And she's just fabulous. The other thing, we had we had a friend of ours attend DragCon out in L.A.
Yeah.
Jess Ketting is a drag queen friend of mine from way back. And as a boy, he was able to go out to the show. He's a flight attendant, so, you know, flights are no object. But he posted a crap ton of great pictures, and we may even have him on in a future episode just to kind of discuss his experience and got to meet RuPaul. You know, I mean, just a great experience. DragCon looked like it was a lot of fun. I'm very jealous. But we got to live vicariously through his adventures out there. We also had some interesting people surface on our Facebook.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We want to give a shout-out to one of our favorite cosplayers, Shinra Junkie. Yeah, so we saw that he liked our Facebook page. So,
Give me an example of, like, what's he known
he's
for?
He's most known for his Waka costume.
Okay.
He's a hunky Asian guy. So.
And is he, which shows, like, would we see him maybe?
I don't know where he's based out of.
Okay. I didn't know if he was, I assumed he wasn't local, but
He's not like Southeast.
Okay. Well, certainly if you do go to any shows in the near future, please look for any gay content. We will hopefully try to let you know when we are going to be at a show. I can tell you right now that several of the show will be at New York Comic Con.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And the others...
You mean everybody but me?
The others will be there in spirit.
I won't be there either.
Okay. Let's have a nice dinner.
It's not until October. Things could happen. You never know.
I got bills to pay now.
Thousands of dollars were spent this past week.
It's a nice car ride. No, the other thing that's very exciting for us here is we will be, well, I guess for some of us, we'll be doing a live show at the Rock Bar as part of Super Week with the Comic Book Bears, and it's going to be...
Are you done salting the wound?
I'm just trying to get people excited because this is a really cool thing. And
yes, it's very...
New York Comic Con was a lot of fun last year.
I heard.
Pleased to be a part of the Super Week stuff last year, and I am thrilled that Flame On will be there in some form. And if we can get all of our little Flame people to contribute and this, that, and the other way, then we will, even if they're not able to attend. So
okay.
I'm very excited, and I hope you guys, if you're in New York for Comic-Con, please come out.
If you're in the New York area and like to visit Flame On.
Yes. So, and then next week, or our next episode, we'll be back with another full cast recording, and we'll have more than just one movie to discuss.
Side note, yep. I was on a podcast called For Geek's Sake. So if you want to hear me talk about like gay things with straight people on a geeky podcast, you should totally listen. It's called For Geek's Sake.
Ooh, cross promotion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I should also mention that the Nerdy Show is about to crank out a bunch of new stuff. And one of the things they're doing is a video show. So I guess I'm going to be recording that. And on the Doctor Who microsode, they're going to be doing very soon. So look for, a lot of you are Nerdy Show listeners, look for that. And I guess that's it. So thanks for listening.
Flame off.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, a comic shop, and the generous support of tops and bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.